All right. Hello, my name is Seth Juarez. We are here in Building 17. Welcome to another episode or installment of Connect Live, where we talk to developers that make actual software that we all use. So I'm pretty excited to be with you. Why don't you introduce yourselves, tell us who you are and what you do.
Sure. My name is Jonathan Carter. I'm a program manager on the Visual Studio team. And as of late, I've been working on tools and services for mobile DevOps, which is really the ways that we can simplify developing apps post-check-in. So how do you do CI easier? How do you do automated deployments easier? And so some of the products specifically that I've worked on is CodePush, which is a service that we've been able to engage with the React Native community with quite a bit. As well as Visual Studio Team Services and Hockey App. So really all things how to make it easier to kind of operationalize a mobile app such that you can maintain quality while still being super agile. We're trying to help make that easier.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Hey, my name is Parshuram, and I'm a program manager at Microsoft. I work with Jonathan. Most of what Jonathan has been doing is towards the end of the developer workflow pipeline. My work concentrates on the first part, which is authoring, inner dev loop, ensuring that you're able to build your app. So it's the same cross-platform mobile application development tooling. Of late, we've been working on tooling stories for Apache Cordova and React Native. Apart from that, I'm also a committer in the Apache Cordova open source community, and we've also started working a lot with React Native these days.
It turns out we have someone on Skype as well. Why don't you introduce yourself, my friend?
Hi, I'm Brent Vatney. I'm a program manager at Exponent. No, I'm not actually. No, not like these guys. No, I'm just a software developer at Exponent. I also work on a project called React Native with a bunch of people at Facebook and a bunch of other open source contributors. I guess I'll intro Exponent quickly because I don't think many people are familiar with that. So Exponent is kind of like it's a platform that tries to bring together the best of web and mobile experiences. So you can navigate to these apps by URLs just like you would on the web, but the apps are the same sort of native experience that you would expect from using a native app on your phone. And this is all powered by React Native.
Awesome. Well, I thought we would start because, I mean, I know there's React and React Native, but React sort of has taken off as a JavaScript framework. Why don't you sort of tell us a little bit about why React is so popular?
Mm-hmm. So I think React, as you said, is one of the more popular frameworks, and it is starting to become popular every single day. If you look at Google Trends, the popularity is actually rising pretty well. One of the key reasons why I think it's rising is the whole idea of how you compose your apps using components. The fact that React Native was probably one of the first frameworks that said you don't have to have separation of technologies. What you really need is separation of concerns. And the way they do it is every component is self-built, self-contained, and then you compose it all together. So that way of software development, I think that's what's something that I like about React, and that's what is a cool thing, is a cool new idea in the front-end engineering world.
Componentizing things is not a new thing in JavaScript frameworks. Our Angular does that too, but there's something that makes React a little bit different even than Angular, correct? What would that be?
Yeah, I think to your point, Angular has components as well, many of them, I guess, directives and services and so on. For me, and I think when I've talked to a lot of people, the area that React is very compelling is this concept of being able to describe your user interface declaratively in a way that is basically saying this is how it should render the first time it's rendered and every other time in the future, and not have to intermingle the state transition code into the rendering logic, that I think makes it easier to reason about how each piece of your user interface actually behaves. And then, of course, you do have code that has to transition state, which then triggers behavior and user interaction in the app. But being able to take a component and say, how does this thing render? How does it behave? And look at a single cohesive piece of code, I think to me is the more attractive part of it. And among that, they kind of had a handful of novel ideas, right? Like React was very at the forefront of saying, hey, you should write inline styles and collocate styles with your components, which in the web was kind of a bad idea because we've always been told to put your styles in a style sheet, and there's reasons for that. But there's a lot of, you know, intuitive benefits to when you co-locate, this is the behavior of a component, this is the way it looks, this is the styling that informs how it's rendered, and it's all right there. And it's not intermingled or cluttered with all of this state transition code of when this button is clicked, this is how this part is rendered differently, which I think makes it hard to understand how a component behaves. Whereas in React, I think it tends to be a lot more easy to grok what something does by looking at it.
Awesome. And let's get our Skype guest. Your name one more time. I must have not heard it.
Sure. Brent Vatney. Brent. Yeah. So I think those are all very good descriptions. One thing that wasn't said explicitly there, I think, was the fact that there's this concept of the virtual DOM. And this is something that is what enables React Native to work as well as React Web. So you kind of have this abstraction where you declare your user interface, and then React takes that and performs a diff between two states of your interface, and then calculates the minimum set of changes that need to be actually set on your underlying view model, and sends those over to whether that's the DOM or whether that's UIKit on iOS or whatever underlying layer you have. And there have been other platforms that this has been run on as well. So for example, in the browser, there's in addition to React DOM, there's React Canvas, which was made by some smart people at Flipboard. Someone has made React Hardware, so you can use React to interface with whatever Arduino boards or that sort of thing. So in addition to that, I think one difference between sort of the Angular componentization model and the React model is, and I think this is a really key difference, is that there's no ambiguity between what is being passed from one component to another. I haven't used Angular 2, but I know that with Angular 1, I used that for over a year, and I often was confused with respect to scopes. Like, when is this scope being passed down through a child? Like, okay, I have to isolate the scope of this, and then that creates this other scope. And, you know, there's this whole sort of leaky abstraction of scopes as a sort of shared state mechanism across components within a hierarchy. Whereas in React, what you do is you explicitly, through the props to your component, which just look identical to HTML attributes, right? It's some property equals some value. Those are all the values that are passed into the component. And ideally, your component should be a pure function. So it should take in some props, some attributes, and then given those set of attributes, it should always render the same thing.
And so essentially, Brent, what you're saying is it's more of a functional approach to building UI on the client side.
Yeah, and I think that this has been a huge benefit to a lot of the functional programming community, in addition to just regular JavaScript developers, who now I think are becoming more of even a functional programming community. But if you look at something like ClojureScript, which actually was my sort of gateway drug to React, was I was running ClojureScript at the time, and all of the web front-end frameworks started using React because they would just build this layer on top of it, which would allow you to use sort of your own, the language's idiomatic features, and at the same time, like, not have to think about all of these imperative side effecty operations that you're used to in the browser, and instead just declare your interface and declare your data, and then whenever state updates occur, you just do this like one swap of some value within some state data structure, and then it would take care of doing all the other DOM transformations for you. And so this has been, this has sort of been used by, I mean, in addition to ClojureScript, Elm is a language that uses not React itself, but it uses one of the big innovations of React, which I mentioned before, called Virtual DOM. And all sorts of other languages are using that now as well. So it's really, I think it's a variety of things that are what are making React sort of very popular right now.
So you alluded to sort of the commingling of sort of concerns that traditionally we have separate, and I think that goes along with sort of, I think it's called JSX. Would you describe a little bit about what that is and why that also sets React apart?
Do you want to take it?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, so as Brent was talking about the virtual DOM, you know, once your components are no longer specifically interacting with the DOM and saying document.createElement or whatever, what your components are doing is now returning effectively a description of what they want their user interface to look like, which that description is almost just kind of like a tree of metadata that says, I want a tag type of, or a component of type, let's say div for now, with these attributes and these children. And you could write that effectively as JavaScript object literals. But what JSX does is it gives you a more elegant syntax for representing that exact same metadata tree within JavaScript that does initially look kind of weird, I guess, because you know we've seen this kind of thing done with you know inline XML literals in other languages and people revolted. But I think for me at least, once I wrote like a few components using the manual way of you know JavaScript object literals or actually React.createElement mm-hmm. is the function that you would call. It kind of demystified, okay, I get what JSX is. It's really just kind of syntactic sugar around describing the user interface that my component wants in a way that looks more elegant.
In fact, if you actually look at Angular 2, Angular 2 is also starting to move towards this whole concept of components. And so in Angular 1, you were defining all of your JavaScript in one file and your HTML was in another. But with things like ESX template strings in Angular, you can actually use something very similar to JSX. It's not really JSX as such, but you'll define your controller. And on top of it, you would have a string return that would pretty much look like your definition. So it's that way of combining JavaScript and HTML that's no longer the wrong way of doing it, if you may want to call it that.
And it's kind of an interesting approach, right? Because now all you're thinking about is you have this component that only works with this data. Mm-hmm. And you're saying that with the virtual DOM, anytime there's a data change anywhere, it gets pushed down to its children, and then it updates only the things that it has to update.
Yep. And yep. I think the good thing is one of the good things about this whole concept is if you give it any state of data, no matter what time it renders, it'll always render exactly the same. So if, say, there's a counter and the counter number is 1, you pass that 1 multiple times, even though you pass it multiple times, there are no side effects, the DOM that is rendered is always going to be exactly the same. So that way, reasoning for what's going to show up, depending on what data is passed, becomes much, much easier.
Awesome. So by the way, this is live. So if you have any questions, please come. Please submit them right below in the question box, and I'll make sure there's already a couple that I'm going to read in a little bit. Okay, so we understand the value of React with client-side development. We understand sort of what Apache Cordova is doing. Tell us the difference between sort of React Native, or what React, let's start with what React Native is, and then maybe do a comparison with Apache Cordova.
So I think, let me give you an example. If you were, say, writing a mobile application, and if you had like a toolbar component, the way you do it on a website is in React, you'll probably have just toolbar. And the way that toolbar would render is using div/div. Now, there is no concept of a div or a span on the mobile application, right? But semantically, your component will still be called toolbar. So the thing that React Native gives you is you will still be able to use the toolbar component, but the way it renders the toolbar component would probably be using like an Android view or an Android view group. And that's like the whole transformation. So it's like transforming from a div and span kind of a paradigm to a view and view group that's much more Android specific or much more mobile specific. So that's what pretty much React Native is. Do you have anything to add about what React Native is?
Yeah, I mean, I think the main reason someone might choose React Native over Cordova is if they prefer the React.js style of defining your user interface, although you could use React.js with Cordova. But I think to Parshu's point, the ability for your user interface to be native versus hybrid using a web view at which point, you know, Cordova doesn't actually solve the problem for you of, okay, well, how do I make my UI look like it's mobile and native-like? And so Cordova and React Native are slightly different, I think, in scope, in that Cordova is almost kind of like an enabler for mobile development, but not completely an SDK that gives you everything you need to build a mobile app, whereas React Native is a bridge between native and JavaScript that has a very React inspired paradigm for many things, but then also brings with it all the native views that are on the platform, as well as native modules. So I think it's really that native UI capability that makes it stand out.
And awesome.
And the way I think of it is it's like a spectrum where on one end of the spectrum you have web and then components styled using div and span. And then on the other side, you have native components. And I think sometime earlier, like in some of the previous episodes of this show, we spoke about this thing called Project Ace, which was like a way to use native components inside Cordova. So it's like a spectrum where you start off with just web-based components, introduce a little bit of native components in Cordova using something like Project Ace, and then eventually go to the other extreme, which is just use native components all the way. And that's what React Native gives you.
So let me see if I understand. So React Native on the surface is similar to what you would see with React on the client side, but something happens where these things are changed. Can you describe that process? How is that actually happening?
Sure. So basically what happens at the end of the day is how does the rendering happen? So the biggest similarity is the virtual DOM. So both React Native and React themselves have virtual DOM. The story is how does this virtual DOM get converted into what is being rendered? On a website, the virtual DOM gets rendered as divs and spans and all the web-based HTML elements. On React Native, this exact same virtual DOM can be converted using Android-specific or iOS-specific native elements like an Android button or an iOS button or an iOS tab bar. So that I think is the biggest difference, and that's basically the whole magic in the rendering process.
And that's interesting because does that reduce the subset of React sort of things you can put in there? Because I imagine you can't invent your own React sort of markup and then have it translated somehow. Is there a correspondence between you have to use a specific React button, you have to use so that it renders properly?
Yes, you do. In fact, on the web, you might use like a button tag or an ahref tag. On React Native, you can't really use them because there's no concept of a button, like no concept of an HTML button, right? So you do have specific iOS and Android components that you have to use in your markup.
Well, but the thing too that we haven't really touched on too much is like really the virtual DOM has two types of nodes that can exist in the tree. There are native nodes and then there's custom components. And so you could create a button that abstracted away some behavior that made the background color a certain way and a certain width. And you could have another component that returned that it would render using your custom component. But at the end of the day, the terminal nodes, so to speak, in the virtual DOM have to be native. In React Native, you can create custom iOS and Android views. And so if you wanted to create your own button, besides using the standard platform button, you could, if you wanted to. And React Native's bridge allows you to bridge custom views to JavaScript for you to define if you want.
So this is entirely different than Apache Cordova, in that Apache Cordova is using a web view to render stuff and then giving you JavaScript hooks back into sort of the native part. React Native, what it's doing is it's mapping these, because you can make your own, but there's standard markup toolbars, buttons, whatever, that will map to their corresponding UI in Android and iOS and Windows Phone.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, it's almost like the bridge in Cordova between native and JavaScript is only used for device capabilities. So if JavaScript needs to say, show the camera, but all UI rendering happens completely isolated in the web view. Whereas in React Native, that bridge is handling not just device capability requests from JavaScript, but also rendering, so that the rendering can actually happen natively, just like it would in any other UI kit or Android application. Which is what enables the custom views to be bridged as well as the JavaScript to actually render a native UI.
And I think Brett here is showing us the native components that we are talking about.
Brett, why don't you tell us what you're showing us so we can get a feel about what this looks like.
All right, so on the left side, what we're seeing is just like the plain, unstyled HTML elements. So, you know, you have a button, a text input, radio buttons, that sort of thing. In the middle, there's the iOS, it's called the UI Explorer. So this is a small sort of example app that is included in the React Native open source repository. And so anyone can build this and run it. And what it does is it just shows the components that are built into React Native. And so these components are the actual platform components. They're the equivalent to like the HTML button and text input and radio button and whatnot. You know, each platform has their own primitives to work with. And so what React Native has done is just sort of, it's sort of been said already, but to further emphasize it, it's sort of provided you with another way to use these in your app by sort of designing, or rather implementing your interface in JavaScript, and then having those views be created on the native side and controlled almost entirely from JavaScript. And so you can imagine how, if in the browser, React is able to work to operate on these, the button and text input and whatnot, it's not like a huge leap to think that the same thing can be done on iOS and on Android for the components that are sort of the building blocks for those platforms. And so what we're seeing here is just the list of components that were available, I think, about a week ago when I recorded this video. And so on the right side, that's Android. Yeah.
And this is interesting because it looks very, I mean, it is native, right? Effectively, yes. It's native.
Yes. So these are exactly the native views that would be used if you just wrote your app in Swift or in Java. And so what usually happens in Cordova is that you will, so if you want to have something like a switch, which we just saw recently, you would use a div of some sort, maybe with like a hidden radio button or a hidden checkbox somewhere, and then sort of recreate the look and feel of what you saw on the platform. Of course, you never get it to be exactly the same feel, but you know, you can get it pretty close a lot of the time, and often it's for simple components like that, it's good enough. But using React Native, you save that whole hassle because you are actually, there you go, switch Android. These are actually the native components that you're using, and so I think there are definitely some huge benefits to that.
Okay, so there did you have something?
Yeah. In fact, if you were to extrapolate this, and Brett did mention things like hardware, right? So you could take this exact same logic and then move it to hardware and say, in your hardware, your output is the LED and your input is a switch. And how does the LED and switch work? It's also going to be very similar. Just that instead of divs and spans, it's LEDs and switches. The other thing to note is, in case of React Native, you probably have to write your application from scratch. On Cordova, on the other hand, you can probably pick up what you have on the website and just get it running on the mobile app. It might not look as like a real mobile application, but the fact that you can just pick up your website code and leverage it and use it inside a web view, so that's a little harder to do on the React Native side.
I see. So there's some questions coming in. I think we'll get to some of the questions.
I just wanted to respond that first. So you can absolutely use web views within React Native as well, right? So if you have some existing functionality that you've implemented and you don't want to have to rewrite in React Native, and you're thinking, oh, well, then I have to use Cordova. Well, you can just use React Native for the sort of shell, the navigation aspects of your app. So maybe you have like a slide-out drawer from the side or a toolbar on Android or, you know, whatever pieces that you need, and then have the specific views that you want to do in web views implemented actually just using web views. And I could show you a quick example of where that's been done effectively. I'm actually just using some slides from a presentation I'm doing next week. Let's see if I can pull this up. There we go. No, that's not it. Navigator. All right, let's jump down to this one. So this is a React Native app. What you're seeing right now, all of this, these are all native components. But once we go into the screen on the right, that graph is inside of a web view. And so you're able to mix and match whatever you want inside of a React Native app. And so on the left there, the map is inside of a web view. And you really can't tell if you do it very well. And so this this app started off as a web app, and Anand Sharma, who made Gyroscope, he has a lot of web background, and so when React Native came along, he jumped on that and was able to reuse a lot of stuff that he had, a lot of knowledge and a lot of existing code within WebViews. And so I think there's definitely an argument to be made for still using WebViews within React Native.
I like that. So what you're saying is that it's not a all or nothing, if I'm going to go React, I need to throw away all my client-side code. You can, right. You can go part React, part WebView, and make stuff that looks as compelling as the stuff that Brent's showing us right now, right?
Yeah. And there's another example of people doing that kind of thing effectively. If you look at the Basecamp app, they use WebViews for a lot of their content views, but the actual navigation components are all implemented natively. Okay. They didn't use React Native for this, but they just wrote it in Swift on this one. And of course, you could use React Native for the navigation parts of it and have your entire app in JavaScript, but effectively native in some places and web views in other places. And it looks and feels like quite good. It works for what you need it. So,
And that's an interesting approach, right? Because you might have content that changes a lot, and you can have a web view in React that sort of pulls content down in whatever format that you want.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
All right, let's get to some questions here. The first one is about CodePush, if you want to take that. Is that okay? Yeah. Would you describe what CodePush is real quick?
I guess what you just said is kind of a nice segue to that. I mean, traditionally, people building mobile apps might have used web views in a native app to host content that they wanted to be able to dynamically update outside of the native parts or screens. And so really, CodePush is just a cloud service that allows you to release updates to Cordova and React Native apps. And then it has SDKs for both of those platforms that synchronizes the changes that you've released. That way that you can be more agile in releasing updates or minor features to your Cordova or React Native apps without having to go through the store to distribute those.
So here's the question about that. Are you finding any pushback from app stores on apps using CodePush? He says it feels like it's a workaround to their app store approach.
That's a good question. I think it's two questions, and I'll answer that. First off, we have not had any issues with the app store pushing back at all. And at this point, we've had a very significant number of people that we've personally talked to that have submitted their app into the store and had no problems. So if people are feeling hesitant about the possibility of Apple or other stores rejecting them, as Brent is bringing up, their developer license is very clear about this, although I will just say I don't think that matters. I've given that quote to many, many developers, and at the end of the day, I think it matters whether we've actually seen this work in practice, and we've seen thousands and thousands of apps that have used CodePush or like similar technologies that have had no problems. In fact, the quote in the developer agreement that Brent has up now over the last year or so has only become more permissive, because before React Native was a thing, the developer agreement and the App Store only made an exception for updating JavaScript that was executed in a web view. But React Native doesn't use a web view, but it does run JavaScript code. And so the developer agreement was extended to include JavaScript core. And so to me, that was another good sign that Apple's had many, many years to determine if they want to be more restrictive about this, but they haven't. The other thing I would say is, the reason that when I talk about CodePush, I don't specifically just say, hey, this is a way to get around the 7-day or whatever delay, is because I think CodePush is valuable, and when I've talked to people using it, for more than just working around that delay. It's really about having a tighter engagement with your users in terms of being able to release updates. And I say that in that even if Apple reduced their review time to an hour, there's still no way for you to enforce policies on the updates you're releasing. Well, they could fix that, or integrate the experience of updating the app into your app, right? There's still a separate App Store app or on Android. And we've talked to many, many users where even if their update got through reviews super quickly, their end users still haven't bothered to update the app. And so there's really this non-deterministic delay between when you want to release some new value and when it'll actually get in the hands of your users. That's more than a function of just the review time of the store. And so CodePush is trying to make that experience deterministic, like the web, right? When you release an update to a website, there's no question. Now, there could be proxies in between you and your users and this and that that could introduce that. But we want that experience to exist. And if in the future, Apple and Android and the Google Play Store and the Windows Store basically introduce all the capabilities that CodePush has enabled, then great. I mean, but I don't know if that'll happen anytime soon. And we think that this is a problem that's worth solving now. Because we talk to people every day that are like, oh my goodness, we released an update to our app through the store. We realized after it went through the review time that some key feature is totally broken. And the fact that we were able to release an update day zero using CodePush and that have not impacted any of our users was a lifesaver.
Is there and there's more questions, by the way. Is there because there's two extremes, right? There's CodePush, all the things, and then sometimes go through the store.
Yeah.
Is there a happy medium? When do you suggest using CodePush versus using sort of an app store update?
Yeah, I mean, for one, CodePush is limited in what it can do, right? So React Native, if we're talking about that, is iterating very quickly. And every time you update your app to a new React Native version or add a new third-party module, so you know Brent has created a ton of great ones. Let's say you now want to use some map component or some other thing that needs native code, you have to go through the store at that point because CodePush is only allowing you to update your JavaScript, JSON files, images, HTML files if you're using the web view. And so it's never going to completely be such that you can use CodePush for all updates. But if you have, I mean, we've talked to developers that are using CodePush that have gone months before releasing an update to the App Store. I don't know if I would say that's the most common workflow. Usually we see people releasing once a month to the App Store and then a few times a week with CodePush. It really just comes down to your needs. I mean, we know some people that are releasing to CodePush multiple times a day.
Wow.
And that's great. Like, it really kind of comes down to the App Store is critical, right? It's a huge discovery mechanism. End users are familiar with it. We're not trying to replace that at all.
Right.
But CodePush is giving you another tool to make sure that you can operate your app in the way that you need. The other thing I would say, too, is a lot of people automate the release of their app from like a CI environment on some set schedule, and therefore they're just releasing an update to the App Store every week, regardless if they need to or not. And that's become a common practice too. And so let's say you're releasing to CodePush every day to the App Store every week. And so there's an equivalent release, you know, that you went to the store, but also to CodePush. And we want to enable that kind of thing too, where you're just doing kind of continuous delivery to reach as many users as you can.
All right, so next question. Is there going to be a Windows UWP bridge of React Native?
That's a good question. I don't think we can answer that. Yeah. But don't be surprised if there's one.
Yeah. And this isn't an area you work in.
I mean, we have certainly heard the interest a lot, and it makes a ton of sense, and we clearly love React Native, so.
Maybe. I would love it.
Yeah.
The next
tuned.
One. I use Taco and Angular 1 routing for making my mobile app run like a spa. How is this done in React Native? Routing in React Native.
That's actually a pretty good question. And React Native itself has built in, it has a Navigator component and a Navigator iOS. Those are pretty much similar to the same routing component that you have in Angular. In fact, I think the Exponent guys also have the X Navigator, right? Brent, do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, so the X Navigator is just a pretty light wrapper around the built-in Navigator. So navigation was something that was along with a couple other React Native components that are fairly commonly used, sort of built as an experiment that quickly, you know, after open sourcing became very popular and with good reason. I mean, it works pretty well, and it was pretty much your only choice aside from using like Navigator or iOS. And so the problem is that it didn't really handle all of the use cases, and the API wasn't always as clean as you would like. And so XNavigator is just, it's an open source library that we wrote at Exponent that is a wrapper around that to give it a bit of a cleaner API and make it a bit easier to use. That said, there is, actually I want to take a step back and just differentiate between Navigator iOS and Navigator. So Navigator iOS actually uses iOS's UI navigation controller, so it has entirely native transitions. It's exactly what you would expect on the platform. Navigator, on the other hand, is implemented entirely in JavaScript. And there are some huge benefits to that, because what you get is, if you have all of your navigation implemented in JavaScript, it means that as long as platform X implements the same React Native APIs, then this navigation will work the same whether you're on iOS, Android, or hypothetical universal Windows platform React Native, right? And so that's a big reason, I think, for using the Navigator component. But in addition to that, you also get this customizability from using it, where because it's written in JavaScript, you can change anything about it and even ship an update for it through CodePush, right? You can, you have full control over it, essentially. However, yeah, there were quite a few issues in sort of the design of it. And so I'm using Navigator on my apps, but we are transitioning to using this new library called Navigation Experimental, which Facebook is transitioning to using as well. It will be going forward the officially supported library. And so it solves a lot of the problems that are sort of inherent to Navigator, in that like a big one that people had was, it was, although you could customize things, a lot of the customization was done inside of the framework itself. So you would kind of have to fork the Navigator to do what you need. Whereas the Navigation Experimental library, which will soon just be called Navigation, it sort of leaves everything out in the open. The state management isn't all done internally to it. You pass in this thing that you want to use to manage the state. And so you can do things like save the navigation state of your app and reload it next time you open it. And so you can look at the UI Explorer that I showed you previously. If you look at the source code for that on React Native, it's actually quite simple. There's just this one line that says, I believe it's persistence key. And so what happens is that as you update your navigation state, if you have a persistence key, then the next time you open the app up, it will just return to your previously navigated position. And that is made possible very easily just because of this architecture that is all based around similar ideas to something called Redux. So I could go into that in a lot of detail, but I think it's best if you're interested in learning more about Redux and the motivations behind the design of that, to check out egghead.io. They have a really good video series by Dan Abramov, who wrote that library that discusses it. But yeah, as for the navigation, you can do sort of your standard routing actions within React Native. It's just the choice of which of the libraries are you going to use at this point. And to be future-proof and to, I think, really have the most options in your app, you probably want to use Navigation Experimental, but as the name would suggest, it's not fully baked at this point, so you might run into a few rough edges, but it is under active development, and Eric Vicente, who works on that, along with Hedger Wang, they are both very available if you have questions about it or you run into a bug or that kind of thing. Cool. I hope that answers the question.
And I think also going back to the original question about comparing with Taco and the Angular routing, conceptually both of them are very similar. So if you may want to call it like scenes, where you have like multiple pages, in your single page application, you'll have like scenes and you transition from one scene to the other. The React Navigator story is very, very similar. In fact, it's so similar that you have like a queue of routes, and you can like pop in scenes and pop out scenes. So you can say navigate to scene one, and then to scene two, and then to scene three, and then pop out of it. So that's what the Angular routing gives you. The React navigation semantics are also very similar. So conceptually, they are very similar. If you want to go implement it, it shouldn't be that hard if you already know the Angular routing story.
So we mentioned it briefly, Exponent, and you started to talk a little bit about it. Why don't you tell us the full story of what Exponent is and sort of how it helps complement what React Native is doing. Brent, why don't you do that?
Sure. So I think it all goes back to the web, really. I mean, React Native is in a sense, it's trying to bring like what we are used to as web developers in this really great development experience to mobile, but without sacrificing the quality of apps that you can build like today. I'm not saying that in the future you won't be able to, with web technologies, with 100% web technologies, build apps to the same quality that we see now. But what we're interested in is building these apps today using JavaScript and using CSS and doing it in a cross-platform way. So another big benefit of the web, I think, is just how easy it is to share your code and how easy it is to just get started and create and sort of share like pointless kind of things where I remember back when I was in elementary school, I made a website about like this really early 3D modeling software that I had fun playing with and just like little tutorials and that kind of thing. But now, I mean, I think children and teenagers and often like adults who are getting into it, they're not really going to be willing to, like they're interested in apps, I think, for the most part, and they're not going to be willing to go through the huge learning curve to, even if they use React Native, learn how the App Store works, maybe pay $100 to get their app on the App Store, go through the certificate and, you know, all these sorts of things that takes hours and plenty of motivation to do versus creating an account on GeoCities and filling in some HTML.
Right? I remember that.
So Exponent, I think, I mean, we're not specifically necessarily targeting to one group of people, but what we want is to bring that same kind of ease of like creation and like sharing and creativity to mobile. So what you can do with Exponent is you download our XDE, which is short for Exponent Development Environment, and you can press New Project. It will immediately create this React Native project for you, fill in some text, and press Publish. And once you press Publish, it's similar to CodePush. It bundles up your app, it pushes it up to our servers, and gives you a URL that you can share with your friends. And so then any of your friends can download Exponent on their phone and go to that URL and see this app. And at any point in time, you can press Publish to update it again. And so I think that has clear benefits to amateurs who just want to play around and share things, or just people who are building these things that aren't quite full-fledged apps, but like they don't want it to be a web thing either, because the experience of apps is just really pleasant. Like, I love using apps. And so, for example, yesterday we had someone in the Exponent Slack who published an app for his friend's bachelor party. And so it was just like, you would never put this on the App Store, right? But it's just like a little bit of information, fun little design, says where they're meeting. You can put in your name to sign up for something and various other things. And it looked great. It felt really good. And he is able to just share it with his friends by sending them a link that they can just tap on, and it would open Exponent, and they have it. And so Exponent is kind of like, we just want to make it really easy for people to do mobile in the same way that for us it has been for most of our careers. Most of us, about half of our company came from a web background, and so we really want that for mobile. We want people to be able to share and not have to go through this huge process in order to be able to like see the fruits of the results and have friends use it and that sort of thing.
That's awesome. So it's like the GeoCities of apps.
Okay.
hey, come on. I love GeoCities. Yeah. Man. I was on Cape Canaveral, 9807, FYI.
Okay, I'll take it.
Yeah. We can channel all of our nostalgia into Exponent now.
So we sort of started moving into the notion of tooling, right? We mentioned the XDE. Is there something that we're doing from Microsoft's perspective to assist developers in making React applications? Obviously, if you want to download the XDE, you have that option. Is there another option that we're helping with or providing?
Absolutely, we are. In fact, on my screen right now, I have the Visual Studio Code extension for React Native. So if you look at the installed extensions that I have, I can just say F1 install extension, or in this case, I'm going to show you the extensions I've installed. And there's one thing called React Native Tools. And this is actually the tool that I would recommend for people who are trying to get started with React Native.
I love how Brent is sort of just hovering inside, making sure everything looks good. You're literally watching his code window right now, my friend. So if you look to your right, it's like you're literally looking at his code. This is awesome.
So some of the features that we have here is I can say open up my project. And I have the typical typical things that you'd expect from Visual Studio Code. I have things like autocomplete, IntelliSense, so I can say code push dot check for updates, sync, all the things that you need when you don't really know the syntax, making you helping you to make applications quickly. So all of that. You also have, if I say F1 and say React Native, I can run the React Native applications right in from here on Android, on iOS. I don't have to necessarily go to the command line, switch between windows. My favorite feature, however, is the whole debugging story. And a lot of people actually have said that they love Visual Studio and Visual Studio Code for the fact that it's so good at debugging.
Sure.
And one of the things that I like about it is the way the debugging is integrated. So if you look at, so one of the things that React Native does emphasize on is a pretty good developer workflow. And to that extent, if you open up React Native today, the debugging story is it just opens up Chrome and then you can set breakpoints. The thing that I like about this is I can start setting breakpoints right where I'm editing. So what I have here is like a couple of breakpoints. I can just hit F5, React Native starts up. In this case, it's running on my phone. And as soon as the app is built, I can hit the Start Sync button and I'm going to hit the breakpoint because that's where I have put my breakpoint here. So that's nice, and then I can do the typical things like inspect my variables, look at the call stack, see what's going on, typically the things that you'd expect from an IDE when the debugging story happens.
And it's all JavaScript.
It's all JavaScript, yeah.
And that's interesting because the debugging has got to be, because there's this weird hybrid, it's not hybrid, it's native, and so how does that all work?
So the way React Native works is it has this engine in itself called JavaScript Core. That's the guy that's responsible for running all the JavaScript. And whenever JavaScript code runs, it has instructions which is sent to the native part of React Native that says, hey, go draw me a button or go draw me something else. And what we are debugging here is the JavaScript that's running the JavaScript core.
Ah, that makes sense.
So if I say start sync, this is the code push example. I just picked it up from the code push repository. And as soon as I hit start sync, code push started. It went, asked the server, hey, what my status is. And once the status came back, I'm actually hitting the breakpoint here. And typically, if I go to the debug window, I can see things like, hey, what's my call stack? Or what are my local variables? I can move my mouse on top of it to look at what my status is. I can do things like move over it, look at where I'm going. What's running, I can just say run. Typically things that you do in a debugging window. So the reason I like this is because otherwise what I'd have to have is I'd have to have a Chrome window on one side, I'd have to have the emulator and my editor. Now with this integrated experience, you have like all of this in one place, makes my life much easier.
I see, and so traditionally it's using Chrome just to run the JavaScript core stuff, and you needn't have to bounce debugging stuff off of it.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting. All right, so here's a couple of more questions. Is the code push service going to be priced at any time?
It's TBD.
TBD, good. Another one is, I think I heard your speaker say something like you have to use Android or iOS specific markup. Can you explain that a little bit more? With Taco, I'm not thinking about device platform specific markup and or view. So is there a sufficient abstraction in React Native to the extent that we don't have to worry about, oh, I need to call this an Android view and put if defs or weird stuff like that?
Yeah, Brent might be able to answer this better. I would say, or
yeah, totally.
Do you want to take this?
I have some slides that I could show for this one.
Let's do
perfect.
It.
Let's see,
you just stop sharing.
Okay,
yeah,
is that
go. He's gonna start sharing.
All right. Okay, so what we see here is a slider component. And so there is a functionally equivalent slider on iOS and Android. They look a little bit different, but for the most part, they have the same functionality. And so although the API might be slightly different in how you actually interact with them with the iOS and Android native components, React Native, where possible, will play this one. Looks like, oh no, it's just not moving yet. Sorry. Where possible, it will sort of bring those together under one unified API, using whichever one makes more sense. And actually, there's sort of like a design decision process where it starts with the web. What is the web doing for an equivalent component? If the web does something that covers the functionality that we need for this component on iOS and Android, then we use that to the extent that we can. If it doesn't make sense, then we look at iOS and we look at Android and we see, okay, which of these two has the better API? Which one better handles the situation? Maybe neither of them are particularly good. We can create our own in that case and just say, let's say on one of them it was like lowest value or like big number, small number, or something like you know, that's sort of dumb. And so we might instead say, okay, let's just call this minimum value and maximum value. And so what we have here is just this slider component where behind the scenes, it's delegating the appropriate to the appropriate component depending on the platform. And you don't have to use the specific slider iOS or slider Android functionality. So that just looks like this in your code, right? You just use the slider and do whatever, and this will run on iOS and on Android. And yeah, like that. So another example of this is when there are components that don't actually work on both platforms. And so an example is using this drawer layout. So the drawer layout is native to Android, and so you can just simply use the drawer layout component, but on iOS that will by default just render nothing. There's just an empty view, it won't do anything. So I wanted to use that in an app, and so what I did was I created just in JavaScript, I recreated the drawer layout and used the exact same API that existed on Android. At the time, it was called Drawer Layout Android. And then I just released this library called Drawer Layout. And so what it looks like for Android is I have drawerlayout.android.js. And all it does is import Drawer Layout Android from React Native and export that. And then the iOS implementation, I actually implement the drawer layout itself. And so when you actually install this module to use it in your project, it will require the file that is appropriate for the platform that you're currently running on. And so ultimately, you write your code like this, and it works the same regardless of whether you're on iOS and Android. So to kind of summarize that, if it's possible, if components exist on both platforms, and we can if the components exist on both platforms, then we bring it under one component and try to make the properties where possible under the same name. If there are certain properties, this is actually a new point, if there are certain properties that exist on one platform but not on another, then often we will add a suffix like, I don't think there is one here, but let's say, get one off the top of my head. Let's say that for the drawer layout we had on Android, something like on back button press or something like that. There's no back button on iOS. So maybe we would say on back button press Android. And then you would know when you're using it, okay, this is an Android specific property. It would do nothing on iOS unless we implemented it in our own version of this. And so that's sort of this approach to it. The second one, as I mentioned, was you can actually just write your own version of the component and then transparently sort of use them in the same way that you would as if they existed on both platforms.
Here's my question for you, Brent, as we're talking about this. When you are writing your own, because it looks like there was something in Android that you wanted out in iOS, so you just went ahead and wrote the iOS one, made it match sort of the markup that you would have in the Android one. Yeah. Is the iOS one now still native? I mean, do you construct it in such a way that it uses a bunch of native mappings?
Yeah, so it's native in the same way that other parts of React Native are native, right? So all of the views within it are using actual, like, as you can see, we're importing view, we're importing, actually, I guess that's, I think this is mostly just made up of views, actually. So there's a view that we slide out from the side that maps on iOS to a UI view. We have another view that is being used as this sort of the layer that fades in and out, so kind of like an overlay. And the touch interactions, those are all handled from the native side and then passed over to the JavaScript side. Now, I would say the key distinction is that on Android, the actual callbacks, so no code necessarily has to run in JavaScript on the Android code. So when you're sliding it open, if you don't have any registered callbacks to watch for the progress of sliding the drawer open, nothing will be fired on the JavaScript side. If all you do is render a drawer layout and attach nothing to it, there's no reason that the JavaScript side would be interested in what's happening. And so it's entirely powered by just the native side. The difference is that on the iOS side, we are actually now driving the entire functionality from JavaScript and from React. So when you press down to start dragging, it'll say, okay, where did this press occur? So this touch event is passed from the native side to JavaScript. It will look at it and say this touch occurred at point, let's say, X5Y100. So it's like, okay, that is within this threshold of the side of the screen that will allow us to start the dragging gesture. So then we say, give the responder to this and start animating and updating the position in response to the dragging. But on every frame, it will go back from the native side with the new updated touch position, pass that to the JavaScript side. The JavaScript side will process that, update the views, and pass that updated value back to the native side. And so the distinction here is definitely that now we have more work that we're doing on the JavaScript side. However, it is functionally equivalent, and there will be certain potential performance implications of that, which we are definitely working on improving. There have been pull requests recently from a guy named Christoph Majera, who used to work at Facebook London, and we actually are contracting him at Exponent to implement what we call offloading animated. So what that does is it will take certain things like watching your scroll position and run the code that would say, as you're moving your mouse, or rather your finger, over from the side, it would be able to handle all of that and updating the animated values to fade this overlay in and move the sidebar out from the side. It would be able to handle that entirely on the native side. And so there are optimizations being done to push more into native there, but that's definitely an astute observation that there's a slight difference between the two.
Awesome. Well, we have about 2 minutes left, so I thought we should spend those 2 minutes talking to people about how one could get started if they're convinced. Hey, I'm convinced. I should look at this. Where are some places that people can go to get started? We'll start with you, my friend.
Well, I mean, there's a handful of resources. Brent mentioned egghead.io earlier. I think, you know, the React Native website itself for the tutorials, I think, have really good getting started guides if you want to kind of just get your feet wet. That said, I think, as we've discussed, getting started with React Native would benefit from an understanding of React.js as well. And so there's plenty of good materials out there from, you know, all of the online tutorials providers. I don't know if I have one particularly that I think is better, but I think the React.js and the React Native documentation itself is actually very good. The community contributes heavily to it. And so I would get started there.
Awesome.
One thing that I might want to mention is this website called Discord. This is pretty much where all the people who do React Native hang out. It's called discordapp.com, and the channel is called ReactiFlux. Just search for ReactiFlux or React Discord, and you'll get to this channel. This is like a chat room where all the React Native guys hang out, and so they have a bunch of channels, and there are channels that say general or need help. If you have questions while getting started, this is a pretty good place to be. In fact, Jonathan pretty much hangs out there for the code push support.
Nice.
He actually does a pretty good job talking to and answering to people almost in real time about whenever someone has code push issues. So I would really recommend getting onto the Discord app and asking people questions. The React people are pretty nice there.
Awesome, and we're gonna let Brent have the last word.
Sure, I think a book, I know it's weird to be recommending a paper book in for such a fast changing technology, but it might at this point have certain bits of information that are out of date, but Learning React Native by Bonnie Eisenman, published through O'Reilly, is a good book to get you started. I wouldn't look at it and expect to take you from, you know, knowing nothing to now being able to write whatever massive social, local, whatever app you want overnight. But like, it will help you get sort of kickstarted so that you're more comfortable, I think, with the space. In addition to that, I think definitely the recommendations of the other two panelists are very good. And probably, I mean, a good way to play with it is to just clone the React Native repository and look at the examples directory too. There are several example projects in there, one of them being the one that I've shown already, the UI Explorer example. And there's also a tic-tac-toe example, 2048, sort of that game. And aside from that, like GitHub, there are a lot of projects on GitHub that you can look at that have been built with React Native that do very simple things, but that I think are a good way to learn how things work.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much, everybody, for spending time with us. We are just a hair over time. This has been another edition of the Connect Live series, live from our Microsoft offices. My name is Seth Juarez. This is Channel 9. Thanks for watching, and we'll see you next time. Take care.